You're listening to Classical 95.9, WCRI Block Island, Exeter, the classical station.
Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight we are once again having in our studio Rhode Island Film Festival representative George Marshall. Welcome back, George.
Thanks for having me.
And along with George, a couple-time guest now is Richard, and I've learned my lesson, Richard. I'm not going to say your last name, so I'll let you do it.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I appreciate giving me a spotlight. Last name, Klenovich.
Klenovich.
Not that challenging,
it's
but...
It's not. It just looks challenging.
Yeah, I'll do what I can to get more airtime.
All right.
So thank you.
And Richard is a member of the faculty at the University of Rhode Island Providence campus, as I recall.
That's true.
And that's a great thing. And George is here to talk about a big event coming up in a short period of time.
Yes.
Today is the 10th of February, so you're looking at what?
We're talking 2 weeks.
2 weeks from now.
And that is the Oscar Experience Providence, and the date is the 24th, Sunday the 24th. The event is specifically geared around Oscar night, and we actually have a red carpet event that is covered live by ABC6. So folks will be interviewed as they enter. There's a cocktail party reception and then dinner, and then people actually on the stage of the Vets will get to watch the Oscars.
On the stage?
On the stage. So it's very exclusive. We are only selling 150 seats.
Wow.
And it's a gourmet dinner from the folks at Ellen LeCanto and Decadent Catering. Plus desserts, gourmet desserts, and we have silent auction. It's going to be a nice evening. We're almost at capacity right now, so we have a handful of seats left. So if folks are interested, they should go online and buy tickets.
And where would they go online to do that?
www.rifilmfest.org.
RIFilmFest.
Fest.
F-E-S-T. .org. All right, great. Well, we'll give you that again towards the end of the show and some more information. But we're here to talk about something. Our theme that we talked about off air before we started is a little bit unusual for the classical station, because you probably don't hear this music a lot on our station. But we've done a lot of things on Conducting Conversations that are not normal for the classical station. Mm-hmm. But this is a classic.
Absolutely.
It's
Absolutely.
A classic, so in that format it fits.
Well, it's kind of interesting because this year the Academy, for the first time, is actually celebrating a commercial enterprise in film. And the Academy has always shied away from films that tend to have that commercial sheen, films that make a lot of money mm-hmm. but are not considered prestigious. So if you look at the past history...
A Harry Potter type thing.
Yeah. And if they get an award or a nomination, it'll be for technical effects or something on that level. In this case, they're celebrating the 50th year of James Bond in the movies, which I think is kind of cool. And most folks are real aficionados of James Bond. When you have conversations with people, they'll tell you which one they like the most. And of course, almost universally, hands down, it's Sean Connery, who was the first official James Bond.
Right. And one of the things we're talking about today, as you mentioned, 50th anniversary, you, at least I, can remember all of the James Bond movies. And I know you're much younger than I am, so you can remember most of them.
I can remember they had ratings that I wasn't allowed in the door when I was a kid.
But, Richard, what's your first memory, since you're considerably younger than we are? What's your first memory of James Bond?
That's a good question. My first memory of James Bond is watching Dr. No on television.
Dr. No on television.
I've been a fan ever since.
There you go. Now, how does this relate? Well, maybe we should get to that in a minute because we've been talking for a while here, and I want to get to some of the music. And I guess a good way to start, I'll get back to my question in a moment, a good way to start would be with the Bond theme, right?
Absolutely, by Monty Norman. And Monty Norman only did one film, and that was Dr. No, but he also worked with a guy named John Barry. So John Barry actually did the orchestrations for this and then kept that theme for subsequent films. And even the most recent film, Skyfall, which has a different composer, Thomas Newman, they actually insert that theme periodically. It's something that is so recognizable. But to realize where it came from and when it was used, and it's amazing that the soundtrack itself has had such resonance and longevity. It's very unusual.
We'll start with that. Certainly that theme song gets us in the mood. Everybody's knowing what we're talking about now. It brings back a lot of memories for a lot of the movies. We're going to cover most of them. Well, I shouldn't say most of them. Some of the more famous ones
50
today.
Years of
right.
them.
But, you know, I have to ask you a question since I have an expert here today. In the news last week was a senator from Connecticut who was complaining about a film we talked about the last time you were here called Lincoln.
Okay.
And we played a piece from that last time you were here, which was at the end of the year, did our year-end wrap-up show with the film things. But he was complaining about the fact that there was a mistake in the movie where the two senators from Connecticut had not signed the anti-slave bill, and he wants them to redo that. And what do you do now? The cat's kind of out of the bag. So I brought a question to my mind. When a movie makes a mistake after it's published, there's not a whole lot they can do about it, right?
Well, unless you're James Cameron, and then you discover that they actually have the wrong sky during Titanic, and when he redid this for the 3D version, he went in and actually changed the sky background so it was accurate for that location, the longitude and latitude of where the Titanic was situated.
Really?
Yes, he actually did that. but that's not the norm. I mean, for example, with Skyfall, you can go online and you can Google Skyfall mistakes. And there are people that probably have nothing better to do with their lives who sit there watching the movies in a theater because it hasn't been released on DVD. And what they're doing is saying, oh, my God, look, he's got loafers on. And then he's got, oh, my God, he's got shoelaces on. They're both brown shoes. But this is the opening fight sequence. This is one of the mistakes that people have discovered, that Daniel Craig obviously is stopping the fight and changing shoes because his feet are tired. I'm not sure, but there's all these things that people go into for mistakes. Correcting them, truth is, when you're watching a movie for the first time, you're there basically, one, to be entertained, and two, to escape reality. That's
Correct.
Really why the larger-than-life concept exists for films. If you're spending your time looking for mistakes, then obviously the film has not engaged you.
Right.
And so if he's looking at, you know, mistakes on this level, historical mistakes happen all the time in films. I mean, even the dialogue, if you want to be specific about it, who was there recording the actual soundtrack of people talking?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is Tony Kushner's imagining from the Doris Kearns Goodwin book that, you know, made up the film, that has made up the film Lincoln. What's the reality of how people spoke to each other or what really went on? Nobody had a camera. This is all speculation.
Yeah.
So the accuracy right off the bat is a question mark, and that's dramatic license. So if you want to excuse it for that, I just think the guy just was looking for press.
Right. It's like Richard and I were talking before the show started today, and we were talking about a famous movie maker, Oliver Stone, and how his opinions kind of become facts. And maybe a lot of people don't agree with some of the things he said. Now, do you deal with any of that when you're talking in your classes, Richard, that kind of thing?
Well, I think when you're dealing with historical accuracy, it's kind of a tricky terrain, because I think if you watch a movie, that people tend to take it as fact and they don't double check or triple check. I know that there's that film, 7 Years in Tibet.
Yes, with, Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt played a real person who was very much lionized in the film. And as the film was coming out, it came to be that he was a member of the Nazi party. So they shot a scene with him, you know, joining the ranks and the such, because people wanted a more, you know, truthful portrayal. But I think anytime you're dealing with history and film, even if it's a historical film, it's a fictionalized account of what happened. And you have to take into account that this isn't the last word on the event. And this is only an interpretation, because most of history, I think, is just an interpretation. We don't really have all the facts.
Well, the old line is that history is best told by the winners.
Yeah. Well, and we don't have to worry about that today, because everything we're dealing with James Bond is obviously not history.
It's not based on fact.
It's not based on fact? I thought this was real.
You just ruined my illusions.
God, I thought this guy never aged.
Well, there you go. And
he's like Doctor Who. Yeah. He just keeps changing bodies every time.
Shame.
The first movie we're going to talk about now, listen to the music from the Goldfinger. Tell us about this.
Well, Goldfinger... The score itself was created by a fellow named John Barry, who again started with Dr. No, but really became into his own with From Russia with Love. And Barry's film scores have a very jazzy feel to them. The film introduced worldwide audiences to Shirley Bassey, and it was, I think, probably one of the strongest scores ever written for a film of that period. It still resonates. It plays well even today. And Barry, again, who had a jazz background, had his own group that performed, I think came into his own. I mean, people will recognize some of his film scores in later years that were not just James Bond. Out of Africa comes to mind. Somewhere in Time comes to mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lion in Winter, which was entirely different. He was an Oscar nominated for that score. The man did had an amazing body of work. But he was able to transcend his own background and grow and evolve, just like Danny Elfman. I mean, think of his background and look at what he's done since that point. So I think what you're going to be listening to is something that became a pop standard. And something that still, I think, works today.
I think it's something that's been copied so many times that when you hear it, it's astounding. So it's one of the most, I think, copied works out there.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting about the score itself is that it really defines the character of Goldfinger, the character played in the film by Bert Frobe, and it's just amazing because you know who this guy is from the song.
Here we go.
His web of sin, but don't go in. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you fear. For a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He loves gold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He loves gold.
All right, we're going to go from that very famous Goldfinger music to equally famous Thunderball, George.
Well, Thunderball has the soundtrack by, actually it was John Barry again, but the title theme was recorded by Tom Jones, who was very popular at the time. And what's interesting about the film is, as with all Bond films, it was shot in location. The bulk of it takes place underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And the music itself, Thunderball, evokes that spirit of being underwater. Amazing cinematography for the film at that period. And Jones's score was again on the top of the charts when it came out. I think it speaks for itself. Let's go to the score.
All right, we'll listen to that, then take a short break and be back with more of the Ryland Film Festival's George Marshall.
Runs while others walk. He acts while other men just talk. He looks at this world and wants it all. So he strikes. He knows the meaning of success. His needs are more, so he gives less. Strikes like thunder.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with George and Richard, and we're talking about James Bond. I don't do that very well. Richard, maybe you could give that a shot.
No. I really can't live up to that, so I'm not going to.
But he plays a mean Bacharach.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Now, we've listened to the songs from Goldfinger and Thunderball, and this next one we're going to, Her Majesty's Secret Service. Tell us a little bit about what happens in this one and who's in it.
This is actually one of my favorite Bond films. I think it's one of the more underappreciated ones by fans. Mm-hmm. But it stars actually George Lazenby, who was the first Bond to take over after Sean Connery. And he was only in one James Bond film. He seems like he got a little too full of himself. And I think it's a good lesson for us all. Don't take things for granted. And I think this is also features the first instrumental score of any Bond film.
Yes.
All the other Bond films had scores that were sung by famous artists. This one is all instrumental, and it's actually pretty astounding.
All right.
And again, it's John Barry. And one more thing to drop. This is the first film that Diana Rigg, who was in The Avengers, the British TV show that was so popular, this is the first film she made outside of The Avengers. And that's she left The Avengers, actually, to do this film.
And she played...
She was Emma Peel in The Avengers. And
right. In
this film, she is Bond's wife.
Now, that's a little known, probably, or forgotten fact. I didn't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So she played Bond's wife. This is the only time that he was married, right?
The only time that she was married. The character's name was Tracy. Her father was a mafioso figure that Bond became friendly with.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, it does not end well, as you may have guessed.
Spoiler alert.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, let's listen to the music. Okay, so that's the theme, if you will, the instrumental version. But, George, you have more.
Yes.
More behind-the-scenes stuff.
More behind-the-scenes. This is the first Bond movie that ever had a montage love sequence. And that's something you find in romantic films or romantic comedies or romantic dramas. This case, you've got a sequence where Bond is actually wooing and being wooed by the character played by Diana Rigg. And what's interesting here is that the film piece, this is where the title song comes in, We Have All the Time in the World, was sung by Louis Armstrong. Now, what's unusual about this was actually Louis Armstrong's last official recording before he passed away.
Hmm.
So it has historical value.
Yeah.
And it also changed the complexion of the Bond movies. Instead of being camp, which we saw in some of the later versions, this film was very serious. And it took the reality of Bond as something that was solid and real. And it did not cheat on it. So here you've got this romantic sequence that was unusual for a Bond film, and I think the only one they've ever had, with a musical piece. So call it an MTV, if you will, sung by Louis Armstrong.
Well, let's give it a listen.
We have all the time. Time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the cares of the world far behind us. We have all the time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only love.
Now, one of the things we have not really touched on is that, and it was reminded during this last piece of music that this is all of these stories written by one author.
Yeah, Ian Fleming.
Ian Fleming, and what was the sequence? So, we said off air, you mentioned something about Her Majesty's Secret Service. Is that the beginning, actually, even though it wasn't the first movie?
It wasn't the first book, but it was one of the more popular books. And Rashad, you want to pick it up?
Well, I think that On Her Majesty's Secret Service came before Casino Royale, and mm-hmm. I think what it did is it set up the character of James Bond well, because in the book and in the movie, he gets married, and then his wife is murdered at the very end. Which sets him
spoiler
up.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, spoiler. But he's not married in any of the new films, so sorry if I ruined that. But it sets him up as this very cynical, dark character.
And also someone who wants revenge.
Revenge, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, we lose that a little bit in the Roger Moore years, right? He becomes kind of a character, kind of a cartoon almost of I don't know, maybe that's a little bit harsh, but certainly not as serious as...
Well, it's interesting with Bond as a character because I think since we have 50 years of films relating to James Bond, the actors who have portrayed Bond along with the writers have created an image of a character that fits with the time frame in which they are portrayed.
Oh, okay.
I think when you're looking at the 60s and you've got Sean Connery, you've got something that reflects that era.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Moore, on the other hand, started strong and started, I would say, legitimate with Live and Let Die.
Mm-hmm.
But as the series progressed and the times had also changed.
Those were the days of Laugh-In, for example, and free love. And
well, I mean, you know, I think Moore reflected the time that we lived in and the interest as well. So you're looking at the 70s and the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happened then as times changed and the world situation changed, You introduce then a Timothy Dalton who takes over for two shows, License to Kill, for example. What happens there is it's a much darker Bond, mm-hmm. a much, much darker Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Then Pierce Brosnan comes in. Now, Pierce had already had he was a known quantity in the United States with Remington Steele on television.
Sure.
So I think that translated into how they interpreted Bond as well. He wasn't as high camp. He was a little more serious. He wasn't bedding as many women.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with the introduction of Daniel Craig, and there was a lapse of number of years when no Bond came out, Daniel Craig came in, and basically they retooled the entire thing going back to the books. And Casino Royale was a tough film in terms of the character. I mean, it was... go ahead.
No, it's a return to a dark, cynical James Bond who's obsessed with revenge, and it's a shift in tone completely from Roger Moore and the more campy... campy Bond existed then. And I also think it fits in with our times today.
Yeah. And, you know, and to be honest with you, from a personal perspective, I think Daniel Craig is an amazing actor. And I think he was aided by having such a strong cast behind him, like Judi Dench, for example, playing M.
Mm-hmm.
Dench brought a sense of gravitas to the role. And I think that said a lot in terms of how the Bond franchise has expanded.
All right, let's get to quickly to Live and Let Die, which is coming up now before we take the break.
Okay, and Live and Let Die, music is by Paul McCartney.
There you go, can't beat that. We'll be back after that.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let. This ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry. Say, live and let die. if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in a cry. Say, live and let die.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with George and Richard, and we're talking about James Bond music. And I'm not sure one of the things we did or did not mention, but as far as films are concerned and the Oscars, James Bond hasn't been overly successful, have they?
It's done good business, but for example, Skyfall is the first film that ever has grossed more than $1 billion.
But I mean, as far as nominations for the Academy, that type of thing. The music doesn't get frequently...
Versailles, you did some research on that.
This is the first Bond film in 30 years to get any kind of Oscar nomination.
Wow.
And I think that's surprising because you think Bond would at least get Oscars for technical stuff, but it's the first time in 30 years. And I think this year has 7 Oscar nominations, including one for Best Song and one for Best Score.
And that's what we're talking about, Skyfall, which we'll listen to at the end of the program. But we have one more to get to before that. And let's talk about License to Kill.
License to Kill was the second film that Timothy Dalton starred in as James Bond, the first being The Living Daylights. Living Daylights was more in the neighborhood of Roger Moore's Bond, mm-hmm. but a little bit darker. But not completely. It still had some light effects to it and comedy elements. License to Kill didn't have any comedy at all. It was an extremely violent James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. And it did moderate business, frankly, because I think it wasn't what audiences expected at the time. Frankly, it still holds up as a very strong movie. Timothy Dalton did a very credible job. I mean, he's got classic roots. He was he's been a stage actor. He's been involved, obviously, with Vanessa Redgrave for years. And if you look at his filmography, it's pretty impressive. But the film itself did not resonate with the audiences, but the theme itself, I think, by Gladys Knight, is quite strong, and that's what we're going to be listening to now.
All right. It's one of the longer ones, so we'll try to listen to as much as possible.
Oh,
usual when George is here, time flies, and we've listened to a lot of music and had a lot of stories. And too bad you couldn't be here in the studio with us. If you're listening to this at home, the stuff that goes on while the music is playing is very interesting too, because I hear all these great stories, but you'll have to get that from George at some other time, because we are running out of time. I do want to thank you both for coming in. Rashad, thanks again
thank
for coming
you.
In. And George, thank you. And one more time about the event on February 24th.
Sure. Oscar Night, or the Oscar Experience Providence, is Sunday, February 24th. The doors open for the red carpet reception at 6 p.m. And you can go to our website, www.rifilmfest.org, or you can call our offices at 401-861-4445 to order tickets.
Excellent. And do that soon if you want to, because there are not many tickets left, and it's going to be a great event. One more piece to listen to. Again, it's a little bit lengthy, so we'll listen to as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And as promised, that's from the new movie, the one that's out right now called Skyfall. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this piece.
This piece is composed by Thomas Newman of the Newman family, like Randy Newman, Alfred Newman, going back to the 1940s and 50s for famous film scores. And Rashad, could you tell us a little bit about the honors of that this film is getting right now? And in terms of nominations?
Well, I mean, since we just mentioned Oscar Night, which is coming up soon, this film was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, which is a huge thing for a James Bond film, and breaks a long dry spell. And it was nominated for Best Score and Best Song, which was the Skyfall theme sung by Adele. But I think we're going to listen to a score off of Skyfall. Is that right, George?
Yeah, this piece here, and actually you can speak to this because you just came back from Istanbul.
So this is the Grand Bazaar Istanbul. It's the opening score from the James Bond film, and I was actually just at the Grand Bazaar. It's called Eminönü in Istanbul. I just came back, I think, 10 days ago. So this will be a nice...
It's interesting because I was just in Pawtucket last week.
Pawtucket reminds me of
Pawtucket,
Istanbul.
Turkey,
yeah.
Yes. The downtown central area is certainly like the Grand Bazaar. Yeah.
It's just like the Grand Bazaar. I mean, why go to Istanbul when you have
Pawtucket, it all here in our backyard?
We have it right here. Thank you both again, and we'll listen to this one, and then see you all next week on Conducting Conversations. Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.